And what if our life's salvation lay in the choice between odd and even, knowing correctly when to choose the greater and when the lesser, whether comparing a quantity to itself or one to another, whether near or far? What would save our life then? Wouldn't it be knowledge? And wouldn't it be some kind of measurement, since the art concerns excess and deficiency? And since it concerns odd and even, would it be anything other than arithmetic? Would people agree with us or not? They seem to think Protagoras would agree too. Very well, my friends. Since it turned out that our life's salvation lies in the correct choice between pleasure and pain, the more and the less, the greater and the smaller, the farther and the nearer, doesn't this appear, first of all, to be a matter of measurement, since it's an examination of excess, deficiency, and equality relative to one another? Necessarily so. And since it's measurement, it must surely be some art and some knowledge. They'll agree to that. What sort of art and knowledge this is, we'll examine another time. But that it is knowledge is enough for the proof that I and Protagoras need to give concerning the question you asked us. You asked, if you remember, back when we were agreeing with one another that nothing is stronger than knowledge, and that knowledge always rules wherever it's present, over pleasure and everything else. But you said that pleasure often rules even the person who knows. Since we didn't agree with you, you then asked us, Protagoras and you, Socrates, if this experience isn't being overcome by pleasure, then what is it, and what do you claim it is? Tell us. Now if we had told you right then that it was ignorance, you would have laughed at us. But as it is, if you laugh at us, you'll be laughing at yourselves. For you yourselves have agreed that people who go wrong in choosing pleasures and pains, which are, after all, the good and the bad, do so from a lack of knowledge, and not just knowledge in general, but, as you agreed earlier still, a lack of the art of measurement. And an action gone wrong without knowledge, you yourselves know, is done out of ignorance. So this is what being overcome by pleasure amounts to. The greatest ignorance, which Protagoras here claims to cure, and Prodicus and Hippias. But you, because you think it's something other than ignorance, don't send yourselves or your children to these sophists, their teachers, as though it weren't teachable. Instead, hoarding your money and not paying them, you do badly, both privately and publicly. That would be our answer to the crowd. But you, Hippias and Prodicus, along with Protagoras, I ask, let the argument be shared among you, whether you think I'm speaking the truth or lying. It seemed to all of them, remarkably, that what had been said was true. So you agree, I said, that the pleasant is good and the painful is bad. As for Prodicus's distinctions between names, I'll set those aside. Whether you call it pleasant or delightful or joyous, or however and wherever you like to name such things, my excellent Prodicus, just answer me with respect to what I'm asking. Prodicus laughed and agreed, and so did the others. Well then, gentlemen, I said, what about this? Aren't all the actions aimed at living painlessly and pleasantly fine and beneficial? And isn't a fine deed both good and beneficial? They agreed. So if the pleasant is good, I said, then no one who knows or believes that other things available to him are better than what he's doing, and possible to do, goes on to do the worse instead, when the better is available. And being weaker than oneself is nothing other than ignorance, just as being stronger than oneself is nothing other than wisdom. They all agreed. Well then, do you call this ignorance? Holding a false belief and being deceived about matters of great importance. They all agreed to that too. So then, I said, no one willingly goes toward bad things or toward what he believes to be bad. It isn't, it seems, in human nature to want to go toward what one believes to be bad instead of toward the good. And when forced to choose between two bad things, no one will choose the greater when the lesser is available. All of us agreed to all of this. "Well then," I said, "do you have some word for dread and fear? And is it what I mean by it? I say this to you, Prodicus. I mean by it some expectation of something bad, whether you call it fear or dread." Protagoras and Hippias thought this was dread and fear. Prodicus thought it was dread, but not fear. "It makes no difference, Prodicus," I said. "Here's the point. If what's been said so far is true, will anyone be willing to go toward the things he dreads, when he could go toward other things instead? Or is that impossible, given what we've agreed? For it has been agreed that what a person dreads, he believes to be bad, and what he believes to be bad, no one willingly goes toward or takes up. They all agreed to this as well. Given these things settled," I said, "Prodicus and Hippias, let Protagoras here defend how his first answer was correct, not his very first answer of all. Back then, with virtue having five parts, he said none of them was like any other, each having its own distinct power. That's not what I mean, but what he said afterward. For afterward he said that four of them were fairly close to one another, but one differed greatly from the rest, courage, and he said I'd recognize this by the following mark. You'll find, Socrates," he said, "people who are utterly unholy, unjust, undisciplined, and ignorant, and yet extremely courageous. From this you'll see that courage differs greatly from the other parts of virtue." And I was quite amazed by this answer right from the start, and even more so once we'd gone through it together with you. So I asked him whether he meant that the courageous are bold. And he said, "Yes, and impetuous too." "Do you remember, Protagoras," I said, "giving that answer?" He admitted he did. "Come then," I said, "tell us, toward what do you say the courageous are impetuous?" "Toward the same things the cowardly go toward." He said no. "Toward other things, then." "Yes," he said. "Do the cowardly go toward what's reassuring, while the courageous go toward what's terrible?" "That's what people say, Socrates." "That's true," I said, "what you're saying, but that's not what I'm asking. I'm asking what you say the courageous are impetuous toward. Is it toward the things they believe to be terrible, or toward the things that aren't?" "But that," he said, "has just been shown impossible in the argument you were making." "That's also true," I said. "So if that was shown correctly, then no one goes toward what he believes to be terrible, since being weaker than oneself was found to be ignorance." He agreed. "But surely everyone alike goes toward what they're confident about, both cowards and the courageous. And in that respect, the cowardly and the courageous go toward the same things." "But still, Socrates," he said, "it's exactly the opposite of what the cowardly and the courageous go toward. Take war, for instance. Some are willing to go, others aren't." "And is going to war," I said, "a fine thing or a shameful one?" "Fine," he said. "And if it's fine, then we already agreed earlier that it's good too, for we agreed that all fine actions are good." "That's true, and it always seems so to me." "Quite right," I said. "But which people do you say are unwilling to go to war, when war is a fine and good thing?" "The cowards," he said. "Then," I said, "if it's fine and good, it's also pleasant." "That much has been agreed," he said. "So do the cowards, knowing this, refuse to go toward what is finer, better, and more pleasant?" "But if we agree to that too," he said, "we'll be wrecking our earlier agreements." "And what about the courageous man? Doesn't he go toward what is finer, better, and more pleasant?" "He has to agree to that," he said. "So on the whole, the courageous don't feel shameful fears when they feel fear, nor take shameful confidence when they're confident." "True," he said. "And if not shameful, then fine." He agreed. "And if fine, then also good." "Yes." "So the cowardly, the rash, and the mad, on the other hand, feel shameful fears and take shameful confidence." He agreed. And do they take confidence in shameful, bad things for any reason other than ignorance and lack of understanding? That's how it is, he said. Well then, this thing that makes cowards cowardly, do you call it cowardice or courage? Cowardice, for my part, he said. And weren't they shown to be cowardly on account of their ignorance of what is to be feared? Quite so, he said. So it's because of this ignorance that they're cowardly. He agreed. And you agree that whatever makes them cowardly is cowardice. He assented. So ignorance of what is to be feared and what is not would be cowardice. He nodded. But surely, I said, courage is the opposite of cowardice. He agreed. So wisdom about what is to be feared and what is not is the opposite of ignorance about these things. Here too, he still nodded. And ignorance of these things is cowardice. Here he nodded only very reluctantly. Then wisdom about what is to be feared and what is not is courage, being the opposite of ignorance about these things. At this point he was no longer willing even to nod, and fell silent. And I said, why is it, Protagoras, that you neither affirm nor deny what I'm asking? Finish it yourself, he said. Just one thing more, I said, let me ask you, whether it still seems to you, as it did at first, that there are some people who are most ignorant and yet most courageous. You seem to me, Socrates, he said, to be bent on making me the one who answers. Well, I'll indulge you, and I say that on the basis of what we've agreed, it seems to me impossible. I'm not asking all this, I said, for any reason but to examine how things stand regarding virtue, and what virtue itself actually is. I know that once that's made clear, it would above all bring to light that other matter, about which you and I each delivered a long speech, I arguing that virtue isn't teachable, you that it is. And it seems to me that our recent exit from the argument like some person is accusing us and laughing at us, and if it took on a voice it would say, you too are strange, Socrates and Protagoras. You, saying earlier that virtue isn't teachable, are now straining to argue the opposite of yourself, trying to show that everything is knowledge, justice, self-control, and courage too, which is exactly the way virtue would most appear to be teachable. For if virtue were something other than knowledge, as Protagoras tried to argue, it clearly wouldn't be teachable. But as it is, if it turns out to be entirely knowledge, as you are straining to show, Socrates, it would be strange if it weren't teachable. Protagoras, on the other hand, having assumed at the start that it's teachable, now seems to be straining toward the opposite, that it would turn out to be almost anything rather than knowledge, and so it would least of all be teachable. So I, Protagoras, seeing all this thrown into terrible confusion, top to bottom, am thoroughly eager to see it made clear, and I would like us to go through all this and arrive at what virtue is, and then examine again whether it is teachable or not, in case that Epimetheus of yours trips us up and deceives us yet again in our inquiry, just as he neglected us in the distribution, by your own account. I liked Prometheus better than Epimetheus in the story too, following his example, and taking forethought on behalf of my whole life, I busy myself with all this. And if you're willing, as I said at the start, I'd be very glad to examine these things together with you. And Protagoras said, for my part, Socrates, I praise your eagerness and the way you've conducted the argument. I don't think I'm a bad man in other respects, and I'm the least envious of men. Indeed, I've told many people about you. That of everyone I meet, I admire you by far the most, among men of your age especially, and I say I wouldn't be surprised if you became one of the men renowned for wisdom. As for these matters, we'll go through them another time, whenever you like, but for now it's time to turn to something else. Well, I said, that's what we should do if it seems best to you. I too have long been due to go where I said I was going, but I stayed to do a favor for the handsome Callias. Having said this and heard this, we went our ways.